Welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast by and for millennials and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. Tonight is February 23rd, 2016. I'm battling a horrendous head cold, so you'll hear me sneezing and coughing and expelling gallons of mucus everywhere. We got a full slate of guests, full house tonight. As usual, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Dana.
And we have a very special guest with us today, Molly. Say hello.
Hello, everyone. I'm Molly.
And Molly's going to have some great information about the Colorado caucus process. On KGRO X's morning show today, we heard our good friends KGRO and Greg Dworkin talking about, surprised to discover that there was a caucus here in Colorado. And we're like, duh, everybody knows there's a caucus in Colorado. Well, everybody here does.
Yeah.
But and they were a little confused about some of the rules and the difference between the assembly and the delegates. And we're going to get to all that in a second. It is right now going on in Nevada, the GOP caucus, which is apparently an epic shit show.
In Nevada?
In Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that what I said?
Yeah, no, you just said the GOP caucus.
The GOP caucus in Nevada.
Uh-huh. Epic shit show.
It's kind of a shit show.
Yeah.
According to some things we've read, not sure. MSNBC seems to be downplaying if that's the case, but
Everyone has been saying that this has been bananas. So far, everyone's throwing poo at each other and calling foul. And
So that's going to be fun. And the first results may be coming in a few minutes. But first, we're going to talk about how the Colorado caucuses work. To make a confession, well, I have an excuse. I just moved here. But only one of the four of us has actually ever done this caucus thing here in Colorado.
Yes, and it's not me.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not Rachel.
Yeah, so no. Molly's going to explain kind of how it works and how her experiences, and then a little more of the minutia to explain how our caucus maybe is different or maybe similar to some others.
Yeah, so I caucused in 2008. Back when it was the Obama-Clinton show.
Who'd you caucus for?
I caucused for Obama.
Nice.
Very proudly. Still would to this day.
Me too.
Third term.
Yeah, third term. Not saying anything. It was a very, compared to what I'm watching here in Nevada, it was a very orderly process. We showed up and you stood in the corner of the person that you felt was the best candidate for you. And then we elected a precinct committee people, so like a precinct representative who would draft the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were reading about the county assembly and the county convention and the difference between the two. So, Rachel, do you want to talk a little bit about what you read?
Yeah. So in Colorado, they have the county assembly and the county convention. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the county convention is strictly for presidential candidates.
Correct. Yep.
And their delegates. The county assembly is for all other elections in Colorado. So like your state house members, your state senate members, your commissioners, that kind of thing.
The lady that we couldn't recall. So now we're just trying to make damn sure she doesn't get reelected.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So they can. Yeah, exactly. Representative Joanne Windholz. So they can be the same person,
yes.
But they have different duties.
Yes.
Right?
So, yeah. So the county level of decision-making happens. So our caucus happens March 1st, which is next Tuesday.
Super Tuesday.
Super Tuesday.
It is super.
It is super. Going to be super duper.
It's going to be very super.
Super duper.
We're very excited.
And so the county convention happens between March 2nd and March 26th.
In other words, when they make sure all the votes are correct and they can set everything up.
Yes. And so then that leads into the district, the congressional district conventions,
right?
Which the way it works in Colorado, we have 64 counties. And I don't know exactly how many congressional districts we have, obviously less. So it's kind of a cascading effect.
Okay.
So the counties then lead into the congressional districts, which then leads into the statewide delegate assignment.
Okay.
So that's kind of the way that it works. It gets progressively smaller the more
kind
steps
like
you go.
The Russian doll model.
Yes, it is the Russian doll model of caucusing.
Okay.
That's what we have here in Colorado.
Okay, great. And what are the dates on that?
So the county convention is and assemblies are held between March 2nd and March 26th.
Okay.
The district convention and assemblies are held between April 1st and April 15th. Happy tax day.
Yeah.
And then the state convention and assembly is held April 16th, one date, 2016.
So which one of us is going to get roped into being a county delegate, you think?
Well,
because they elect them at the caucus sites, right? Yeah,
they do. And I was actually nominated to be a precinct committee person at the caucus in 2008, which really consisted of some paperwork on site.
I bet you Rachel does.
How does the nomination process work? Does that, is it they take volunteers and then take the people that are most likely to do a good job out of the volunteers that are chosen, or is there an actual vote on that as well?
No, there's no vote. It's really like I if they could draw straws, they probably would, because it's not really something that a lot of people want to do.
Okay.
If they know what it entails.
If they know what it entails.
It doesn't pay anything, right?
No, it doesn't pay. All of this is volunteer. Yeah, they can't pay anything. That would be against finance rules.
Do you have
to
go to the convention?
I did not go to the convention. Okay. I didn't make it that far, but I think that if you wanted to, but you know, of course, with the party leaders, they have people that they already have their own delegates.
Well,
okay.
At the state level, sure,
they
but,
do.
But at the county level, I'm sure they're going to draft whoever wants to do it.
Yep, right. There's definitely opportunities to get more progressively involved, which. You know, the caucuses are not necessarily a great model, but that is one thing I appreciate about them, is that it is definitely an opportunity to get involved in grassroots.
A caucus, in theory, is fine if it's well organized and well staffed.
Yes.
I don't know. I still don't like it. I have to be totally honest. I don't like the caucus model at all.
I like it maybe on the local level, maybe.
If it's well organized, great. But the idea that we have to say it's okay if it's well organized sort of implies that it's not often, and that's true.
But
it's
remember,
not
we do it different from the Republicans. Like tonight, they're doing the secret ballot thing again. So basically,
yes,
it works
not,
in essence like a primary almost.
Correct.
Where in Nevada, they can walk in, write their choice on a piece of paper, and leave.
Yes.
Right.
Now, some of them are choosing not to do that, or they're confused, or they don't know what the hell's going on. But ours is the whole is the old school, old timey powdered wigs and tights.
Yeah, and I don't like it. I'm just going to be honest. I don't like the caucus system at all.
I do think there's something to be said about, you know, when the caucus actually comes to your state, like when it becomes your turn, that you can weigh the pros and cons in a group and decide at that time. You know, it's not like you show up with your mind made. A lot of people obviously will show up with their mind made, but you have an opportunity to say your piece before everyone sits down and writes their thing, or, you know, submits their ballot. And I think there's something to be said about that. I mean,
about hearing from your community members.
Hearing from
your
community members about, exactly.
Sure.
And so you're not being necessarily fed from, you know, mass media or, you know, Bernie Bros on Tumblr or, you know, these kind of things that, you know, do shape elections. I think it's worthwhile to hear from your neighbors about why they think that this will actually really matter to your neighborhood or why it's going to affect your everyday life.
It has its pros and cons, but just based on the fact that this is my problem with the caucus process, right? Especially in a place like Las Vegas. Now, granted, the Republicans are doing theirs at night.
Which is so weird, right?
Ours is at 7 p.m.
So if any of
but there's like...
But at all these hotels, especially
doors close at 9
in Las Vegas.
Doors close in 1 minute and 20 seconds from right now.
So
the doors aren't even closed yet.
But the point is that all these different sites, like hotels and whatever, none of these people are going to be able to participate. And a lot of the ones for the Democratic ones, the lines were so long, it was taking so long that they couldn't either.
Yep.
Whereas in a primary, now granted, for a primary, there could be huge lines too, but... Typically,
but
it's much faster.
You click a ballot, you go home. This is like stand in a corner, get registered, and in the case of Nevada, right, that you can register. Well, at least for the Democrats, you could register the same day. The Republicans, you had to register.
I
think
and that's another thing we should add. There were some other questions about the Colorado primary. You had to have been registered and party affiliated as of January 4th of this year to participate, and it's a closed caucus.
Yes.
So you can't cross over if you wanted to.
And if you're an independent, you are not allowed to be part of the caucus system.
In Colorado.
It kind of sucks.
I've been paying attention to the Kansas one as well, because our friend Brenna is in Kansas as well.
She's going
to
be working.
And she's going to be working as a caucus captain, which is interesting in and of itself. But they do an entire other thing, which is same-day registration, which means you can walk in and say, I'd like to be involved in this process, and you immediately get signed up and are allowed to be
part
of the process.
And again, I think there's pros and cons to that model. I think we maybe are a little bit more orderly because we have a better idea.
Because everybody's high on weed.
A closed system.
Well, yeah, everybody's high on weed. And we weren't in 2008, though.
True.
And everybody...
Well, not legally.
But we kind of have an estimation of how many...
Breaking news. I'm sorry, Molly.
No, go for it.
We have a projected winner in Nevada. some guy named...
Donald
Trump.
Trump.
What does that sign say? Trumbo?
Some
Trumbo?
Something? Soggy Cheeto.
Dalton Trumbo has won the... Trump.
Yeah, there's quite a few white people waiting for him to arrive.
Really? Lots of white people. That's surprising.
Shockingly enough, they're waiting for him to take the stage.
So the Trump train is out of control and
barreling... Ted Cruz has zero delegates right now. Yeah,
barreling right... Well, they just started.
Donald Trump is very potentially going to be the GOP nominee.
God, I hope so.
We'll get to all that in a second.
But hang on, I want to go back to what Molly was saying about the system and the pros and cons sort of the caucus system.
So, I mean, so we kind of have a general estimation of how many people may show up.
Yes.
Which leads you to be able to staff it a little more.
Yeah.
Leads you to be able to have a little bit more of an orderly process.
And because we don't have to register people when they show up, then it doesn't take as much time if the seven people in front of you aren't registered.
And I did really like I liked the community aspect of it. I liked the idea of people coming, sharing ideas. You know, we were discussing earlier the 2008 primary as... maybe as disastrous or nasty as this one has been. 2008 was worse in some ways.
Numbers look eerily similar to South Carolina. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. It's yeah.
So far, just 3% in. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's
the polls closed like 2 minutes ago. Let's give it a sec.
It's just Donald Trump's on the runaway Trump train.
Anyway, the community aspect
so,
of it.
The community aspect of it. And it's a lot less polarizing than listening to the news. You know, you get to hear from your neighbors about why they're supporting a particular candidate or what their issues are with another candidate. So I liked it. It was engaging. I liked meeting people that I wouldn't normally meet.
And when you went there, you were already decided for Obama?
I was. And this year, I am caucusing undecided.
Yeah, really? You're with me.
Truly
I am.
Undecided.
Yeah. I am truly. Yeah. I am walking
in. Rachel, you made your...
I did.
I'm
going to caucus for Clinton.
Yeah, so we have two...
I'm going to change your mind.
We have two Sanders caucusers. Is that a word?
Caucusers? We just made it up.
One caucusates. One Hillary caucusate.
And one undecided.
And one undecided. I am walking in undecided. And I'm in a pretty...
Swingy place.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see.
I've been around here. Yeah. It's a very swingy place.
Here's your...
Here's
your <Here's swingy. laughs> South Aurora, man. So, man, you get down south of Mississippi and Havana.
Look out down there.
Strip
I'm like right by Centennial. It's where all the...
There's a Chuck E. Cheese, I think.
So, Stepford Wives.
Anyway.
So, there is one more thing I wanted to say about this, where I will give a little defense of the caucus. Which is, I agree with you that it's important to have a pretty good idea of how many people are going to show up in order to, you know, properly staff it and manage it. But we can handle a little bit of swings and lesser or more people because really it's about math, and what you really need is people there who can count. Whereas if you have a primary, if there aren't enough ballots printed, which is what we saw most recently in South Carolina, you know, people get turned away and say, like, you know, we've hit the maximum number of people.
Or we're out of registration
forms.
We're out of registration forms.
We're out of ballots, these kind of things. In a caucus, it really doesn't matter. It's something you could say, like, okay, well, this space is obvious.
You can run out of forms in a caucus, too.
You can run out of room.
But there's not really any forms associated with it.
No, there are.
Well, I'm sure there are forms associated with it.
No, not registration forms.
Let's say you were anticipating 385 people showing up and 4,000 people show up.
Iowa did have same-day registration for their caucus. And that's why some of that was totally chaotic.
Yes.
But what Colorado does not is
exactly. So the way we're doing it, I'm saying that, you know, in Colorado, it's possible that, you know, we could have a, you know, my caucus place is going to be at a high school in a gymnasium. It could turn out that that gymnasium was anticipated to hold 650 people, but it turns out 3,000 people show up. You know what we do is we go to the football field.
The gymnasium could hold 3,000 people.
Well, the gymnasium could still hold that many people.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say it goes out of control. Like, it's about counting people in math and not about forms and preparation.
Right. So if we had to go to the football field, you're saying,
if we're over
the fire, whatever limit, we could go outside. Yeah.
I mean, and I think there's an argument to be made for any kind of process that either streamlines things. I mean, I would be all for a same day, pick your candidate on both sides, much like we have a general election.
Yeah.
But this is a party-run process, you know.
Yes.
So the parties are going to decide how, and you can argue the pros and cons of that. But as of right now, the DNC and the RNC run how this goes,
and that also feeds into something we haven't even gotten into. We will at some point is the idea of superdelegates,
right?
And David Waldman, Kagro X, got into a really interesting defense of superdelegates on his show, which I didn't necessarily agree with it, but it was a well put argument. And you guys, if you're interested, should
say I haven't heard that yet, but I have a pretty blistering non-defense of superdelegates. I'd actually...
Here's the thing about super...
At a future date, I would actually like to do a 20-minute segment on what the hell are the superdelegates, because I'm really well-versed in what they are. I paid a lot of attention in 2008 to the superdelegate process. And then even in this election cycle, I didn't really think about it at all. And then somebody said something about superdelegates. And I was like, God damn fucking superdelegates.
Let me give you the really basic primer.
Yeah.
If you are a party rep who has made your bones and done your time done the groundwork and done the hard labor for the party, you have... basically the luxury of being a superdelegate.
You get a cookie.
But here's the thing.
And it's not even oatmeal raisin.
Here's the reality of it.
Well, unless it's Bernie.
If we were to head into the convention and Bernie's got a 1,000 delegate lead,
superdelegates are not going to cause a fork.
They're not going to turn it over and cause a revolution.
I mean, I was talking to my Republican parents this weekend, and that's all they could talk about. Well, it doesn't even matter, does it? Doesn't even matter who votes, because you guys have super delegates. Hillary's going to win anyway.
That's absolutely never, as far as I know, that has never happened in the history of the DNC, that the super delegates have overrun, like, say, two candidates go into the convention and they cause a convention floor fight over them picking a different
candidate. Well, 1980 was a little weird.
It was weird. And
But that was before the super delegate situation that we've got now existed. They reformed it in 1988.
True.
Yeah. So that was an entirely different thing. I mean, if we really want to go into it, we could talk about George Wallace and all sorts of things.
We won't get too in the weeds, but the quote liberal media are some of the worst perpetrators of this whole superdelegates are going to screw everything up, and it just doesn't happen that way. And they did the same thing in 2008, right? Because Hillary had all these extra superdelegates pledge, even though Obama, they're going to go to the floor and they're going to hand it to Hillary Clinton. No, that didn't happen.
That didn't happen. And Obama walked in, the presumptive nominee, the superdelegates absolutely supported him 100%.
Yep. Which is exactly what
Hillary Clinton would, if the people wanted to be crazy about it, and they'd always find one jerk out there who was a superdelegate. Oh, I'm voting for Hillary no matter what.
I don't care what happens.
No, that's not how it actually works.
No. Yeah. And there is kind of a tacit agreement within the DNC. It's not a signed, pledge the way that the Republicans make everyone do anything. So nobody's signed to it, but there is a tacit agreement amongst anyone who's been chosen to be a superdelegate or been given that, privilege, air quotes, that they will go with whatever vote was the majority vote in the region that they're intended to represent.
Of course.
That is a tacit agreement, and somebody going against that would be...
uncivil.
It would not only be uncivil, but I think it would blacklist them. The reason that they're given the privilege to be a superdelegate is because they've been, quote-unquote, civilized within the party.
They're reasonable, and
it's a cookie you give to somebody who does what the party expects them to do. And so if you're given that cookie and then go against what the party expects you to do, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Yes. So everyone who has pledged to Hillary it's not a pledge. No. It's not a written sign.
It's a here's who we'd prefer.
It's a here's who we prefer this early, months above.
It's not a promise ring?
It's not a promise ring.
Good, because those never
work. The superdelegate count at this point, frankly, is a canard. And it's not something, and we're getting into this.
It's something for the press to talk about. For the press to be obsessed about and say, well, democracy is dead and the Democratic Party doesn't really know what they're doing and blah, blah, blah. But really, you're exactly right, Molly. It's not a thing.
Told this week that Hickenlooper came out in support of Hillary Clinton. I said, that's not what he did.
Yeah.
He came out and said, I'm a superdelegate as of right now, pledged to Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
I will wait until the results
of Colorado come in, and if they vote for Bernie, I'll vote for Bernie in the convention.
Let me defend the critics of the superdelegate, though. Because, somebody's phone is too close to the thing. But anyway, let me defend the superdelegate criticism for a second, in that it does give the appearance of sort of a preferential treatment or a number to look at that assumes a lead or an advantage in votes that may not necessarily be there in real life to this point.
Right. Well, so that is kind of the point. Right, the reason that the concept of the superdelegate exists at all is because what the party is trying to do by having superdelegates associated with any of this process whatsoever is to try to take anyone who the party may or may not agree with,
yeah,
but the public responds really well to, yeah, right, and take them out of the process and say, like, this person, it's to weed out extremists. It's kind of to move everything to the middle, yep, to make sure that anyone who makes it to the nomination is more electable.
So it's, yes, almost obsolete at this point.
And, yeah. And well, I mean, when we look at somebody like
McCafee?
McCafee should still be in the race. Why McCafee, he dropped out?
Where did he go?
Missed that he guy. Lives on in our memories.
You know, we look at somebody like this. Wasn't when it was about 10 years before this, but Ross Perot.
Yeah.
Right.
But he was running as an independent.
Right. So if he had run as a Democrat, that's the point of having superdelegates, was to edge him out of even, yeah, having the possibility
if it was a three-way
of running.
Tie.
It's kind, yeah, of, exactly. It's kind of a way to avoid floor fights.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. This is exactly what I'm trying to get at.
I mean, in theory, the Republicans this year are much more likely to have a floor fight, yes, than the Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So, I mean, yes, something could be said for the superdelegates in that way, but I think it's yet to be seen. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, from my personal political point of view, and the idea of edging out somebody who's maybe a little bit too left, I think it hurts the party, because as we're seeing with Bernie Sanders, you know, the further left we see somebody come out with very strong policies, a lot of people are really resonating with that, and there's a lot of people that I've seen online, yeah, saying, like, yeah, I've been running as a Democrat, or not running, but voting Democrat, yeah, for 35 years, but this is the first time I've been passionate about a message that somebody's, sure, come out with. Like, this is the first time I've actually really felt that a Democrat actually represented me.
But he's not a Democrat.
Well,
is,
that's the problem. That's well, the problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's a two-party system.
Yeah, like,
he's
exactly.
not a Democrat.
Exactly, Dana, you read my mind. It's a two-party system. So you're, yes, talking about a very wide swath and this counterbalance of two sides, and you, right, can fall anywhere in the middle from just, right, slightly right to just slightly left, and your choice could be a Trump or a Bernie Sanders or a Ted Cruz and a Bernie Sanders, which if you're moderate slightly on either side, you're probably going, what the hell
what
am I supposed
do?
To do here?
Yep. Right. Yep.
So I would like to see it more like Canada, maybe.
The superdelegate thing is. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
sorry.
Go for it.
That's what the superdelegate thing is supposed to do. It's supposed to make it so it's not Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump. At least on our side, we tried to get rid of the Bernie Sanders side with the superdelegates and say at least it's going to be something that's going to be tasteful to most of the American public.
I don't think Bernie Sanders was as extreme as they were thinking.
No.
I think they were thinking more like someone from the American Communist Party.
And I think he's
here.
Much right. more electable than anyone ever saw coming.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree with that.
I mean, he's got a lot of huge ideas, but yeah. they're not...
But people are responding to them in a way yeah. that I don't think anyone saw coming.
Well, and I think he's doing a really great job of trying to take things that could be spun. You know, he's a fucking socialist. There's all these things coming from the super, you know, left. But he's spitting them as common sense ideas in a way that is normally the stuff that Republicans do. And he's got a really great one-liner that he puts in all the time that says, like, I don't think this is a radical idea. Might call me a radical, yeah. but I don't think this is a radical idea.
And people go nuts.
And people go like, no, I don't think that's a radical idea. I totally resonate
Trump
with that.
Trump is doing the same thing except dumbing it down by 800%.
Yes.
Which it's no wonder why that's appealing to so many on the right.
Right. And that's why we don't let fourth
it's
graders
like,
vote.
Make America good, build wall, more job.
And fuck those bad people. We're going to do great things.
Wait, what
you
is?
Just don't worry about it.
That's too many words.
We're going to do great things.
Too many words. Take some words out.
Brando.
Great things. Don't worry.
Yes.
Good stuff.
America good.
America good.
Military strong.
Military strong.
Donald Trump, it's got what plants crave.
Help veterans take
Donald Trump, it's got what plants crave.
It's got what plants crave. That's correct. Donald Trump. We have his new slogan. Guys.
There we go.
So anyway, I'm glad we got
I'm going to make a shirt that says that.
Donald Trump, it's what plants
I'm glad
crave.
We did get
RiverTestimony.store.com.
Oh, that's coming. But I'm glad we got into the superdelegate thing, because that's the thing that a lot of our listeners probably worry about.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, wow, this thing is rigged, it's in the bag. Yep. Well, that's a little bit of prime runner. We'll get
true.
More into it later.
Yeah.
Don't worry about superdelegates. If Bernie turns the tables yep. on this and has a legitimate delegate lead going to the convention, he's going to be the nominee.
Superdelegates will not cause an overturn of what people vote for.
Absolutely
it's
not.
It's kind of, at this point, a media construct that is intended to look the way that they're making it look.
And frankly, sure. if we're not happy with the party system running the primary and caucus process.
Yeah.
That's a bit larger discussion.
Oh, absolutely. Let me get in on this discussion, because you know what I think of Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
Well, I think the same.
And I
teach.
She's
a terrible
I lived in that district in Florida, and I have plenty of peers my age who are probably sitting around just as pissed off. Where were you? Did you show up to vote when she was primary? Did you show up to vote for any challenger she might have had? Did you do any sort of grassroots movement? So, you know, this is about getting involved.
Politics are local, people.
Hey, all politics are local.
So, and again, I'm going to sort of sound like Bernie, ironically, when I say this, but sort of beating a dead horse here, what Bernie is trying to do is get people more involved at every single level. Yep. And I want him to sort of expand on that a little more. And if things turn out the way they might be looking, where he doesn't quite get the nomination, he's really got to get on board and make sure that these young people do stay involved and vote down ballot and get involved locally and at the state level. And he can even say, wow, you think I got a raw deal? Well, you go out there at the local level and bring in reps to represent the Democratic Party going forward, where I will get a fair share.
And can as a Hillary supporter, the great promise of Bernie Sanders is to bring in those voters, right? The way that Barack Obama did us being me,
younger,
who's voting.
And younger.
Younger people, people of color.
But there's nobody younger than us.
People, are there? Of course. Yeah, young people, people of color, people of lower income, people people who don't traditionally vote.
Right.
And the traditional voters are old people.
Older white people.
Older people, white people, upper middle class people, and educated people vote. So the promise of Bernie Sanders is to bring the down vote, right? Is that people are going to be so jazzed by him if he gets the nomination that they come out and they vote Democrat all the way down the ticket, and we take back at least the Senate. The House is gerrymandered till 2020, but at least the Senate,
That's what I was going to point out.
But there's more than that. There's more than that, right? There's local and state primaries coming up, and there's Democrats out there like Alan Grayson. Wasserman Schultz, unfortunately, looks like she's completely safe from any sort of primary.
Yes.
But
she's not safe as a DNC chair.
Oh, no, God, I hope not.
God, no.
If Hillary gets elected, she'll be safe because she can say, look what I did. But look, the point is this. Find out what's going on locally and at the state, because there are Democratic reps. Some of them are fine. Some of them lean a little too right. Whatever you think. There are progressive types like Bernie Sanders out there who, if you organized grassroots around them and donated some time and a little money if you have it, but if not, just time and made awareness and got social media campaigns going, you could get these people in position of power to influence where the party is heading.
Bernie Sanders. Say to them, like, look, you're going to vote for Bernie? Vote for this guy. He's the same kind of person, but he's going to be representing us locally.
Yep.
But, you know, when we talk about, you know, donating time to a certain degree, I feel like we're almost overestimating it. If you find somebody that you actually agree with their positions on, retweet their tweets. Like, you don't necessarily need to put a lawn sign in your yard or canvas. Like, just pay attention to what they're saying and spread awareness about their message. It takes 2 seconds to figure out who you like.
Bring it up at a dinner party.
That's the best thing to do. Exactly. Talk about it among your friends and family.
And it's not just about candidates, but it's about issues.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. And I don't know that we focus enough on what the issues are that are on your ballots.
Right, lady.
What the issue, like, those are the things working at the state level, like I do.
Yeah.
I can tell you that those are the things far more than candidates that drive policy, that drive procedures, that drive what affects your life every day.
Yes.
And could
potentially drive voters. If there's something like Amendment 64, which legalized marijuana recreation in the state of Colorado, was one of the biggest voter turnouts in the state. People who didn't vote for anything else were like, I want pot legal. They voted for Democrats. And we have the House, we have the state, and we have the governorship because of Amendment 64.
Barely the governorship.
I mean, agreed, but we have terrifying. It. We have all three, though. We're a blue state right now, right?
Blue-ish.
Well, we have yes and no. The House is, I believe this is true, the House is still Democratic, the Senate is not. The Senate went to the state Senate is majority Republican this year.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Sorry.
So we
have two out of three. Prognosis for getting much through the legislature this year is poor. In the state of Colorado, only because we've got gridlock.
Like everywhere else. Yeah.
But it could be a lot worse because we had a very, very close governorship race this year.
Yeah, it was very
close. Too close for comfort.
Yes. Against a candidate who I was shocked to see that close.
And like we posted on the Recall Windhold site, a guy who was probably as extreme as Matt Bevin, and you would have seen probably Planned Parenthood funding cuts and all kinds of other crap right now. And he won by a whisker because nobody showed up.
Yes.
Yeah. An awful turnout year in 2014. Yes.
Yeah, and this is what I was trying to say, is that even though we had a very, very popular youth turnout on Amendment 64.
Yes.
They apparently didn't. There were a lot of
Here's what I was going to say
it's
is
possible,
you know
right?
the assessment the assessment of the ballots was there were a lot of people who showed up and just voted on that, which means not enough people when they were smoking weed before it was legal were sitting around talking about the issues and the candidates that were also at hand also on the ballot. They were smoking joints,
good old single,
and saying like I'm really happy that there's going to be joints, but they left the other parts of the ballot blank, which means. People are not talking
about. That means the local party did a terrible job.
That means the local party did a terrible job, but it also means that, you know, when the Amendment 64 people were talking about stuff, when they had somebody on the line, they didn't engage them and say, by the way, do you know that these other five things are important?
Well, that may be important to you.
Because they left the rest of parts of the ballot blank.
There may be a cause for that. There could have very well been that a lot of local and state politicians tried to distance themselves.
They didn't want anything
to do with 64. Well, that's very true. I mean, a lot of people were not tying themselves to a yes or no on Amendment 64.
Because they weren't sure I was going to go.
Because they weren't
sure. In retrospect, so they were like, oh, I should have gone.
They were all ready to evolve the day it passed.
Yeah.
But they couldn't align themselves with it beforehand.
Yeah.
And almost everyone got on board. What's the Netflix show about Colorado pot business?
It's
been really
High
fascinating.
Profits.
High Profits.
Is this specifically about a dispensary that opened up in Breckenridge, Colorado? That was opened up as a medical dispensary when medical marijuana was legalized in Colorado, and they had it on Main Street in Breckenridge, and then they waited until recreational became legal, and there was a really interesting local politics battle about that dispensary being on Main Street and the other dispensaries that tried to open and how that affected the city and their image and their brand.
Because nobody's ever hired drunk on Main Street.
Have 75 restaurants and or bars on Main Street that serve alcohol. And they were arguing that we're trying to be family friendly. Anyway, it's a really interesting show. It's called High Profits. It's on Netflix.
I highly recommend it. My point was being that if you
highly recommend it?
I highly recommend it. Just for the point being that if you want to see somebody who really is, you know, very into playing this as politically as possible and being noncommittal up until the very point where it becomes legal, has to embrace the fact that it's legal. The mayor of Breckenridge in that show,
oh my God,
it's amazing to watch him, quote unquote, evolve on this issue and be
overnight.
Like, you know, I'm really against it. I'm really against it. Oh, the voters voted for it. Oh, so I guess that means that would make me like, well, I'm going to join the long line outside.
Have a hot cocoa and come buy some pot. He didn't buy pot, but you know, it was obvious.
Marco Rubio's in second place right now.
Oh,
I'm just letting you all know.
Well, he's going to take second place because what a lot of people don't realize was he was actually raised Mormon. And you got a whole mess
that's
of Mormon.
Right,
talk
before
about
he converted to Catholicism, right?
We're in Nevada right now.
That's right,
And they'll eventually use that against him.
So that's why he was telling Ted Cruz's father that there's no answers in the Bible.
Only in the Joseph Smith version with the golden tablets. No, I don't think he was saying that.
Jesus
but.
From America.
You know, I look at our side, you guys. I know the difference between Sanders and Clinton, and we have these two diametrically opposed but really strong candidates. And then I look at this circus, and I'm...
I know.
I don't even know if I'd call our two candidates diametrically opposed. Like
they're just
the differences are nuanced and their histories are different.
Yeah,
and
but their issues and causes are exactly the same.
They
just have different means.
Yes. Yeah, their goals are the same. For me, I think, you know, having many late night conversations with Rachel, if you're a regular listener, you know one of Rachel's main arguments for Hillary Clinton is that she is for a stepstone approach to get to the goal where Bernie Sanders is trying to say, let's not go incrementally, let's aim for the final goal.
To my argument, it is that I think she will actually get something done,
correct.
And he won't.
Yeah, well, this is going
to
just
to
turn
fair,
into a much more nuanced argument between you and I if we start to break it down that finely. All I wanted to point out is that she has an incremental approach, whereas he has...
A revolutionary
approach, and I think
but hers will get done and his won't. Sorry,
I don't think either will get done. I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this only one more time.
Neither will get done without what we were just talking about.
Yes.
The down ballot wave.
Yeah.
I mean, neither is going to get anything through without this so hit without retaking the Senate.
I think at we least. Won't take at it.
Least. And gaining if, ground if, in the House.
Yeah. If yeah, I'm rubbing my magic eight ball, I'm going to say we're not going to get the full down ballot so that we have a full blue run of everything. And so we're going to have some form of gridlock. But what will happen over the course of time is if we have a Hillary Clinton presidency, I'm afraid that she's going to aim too low and get blocked on things where it doesn't change the heart of the country. Whereas if Bernie Sanders is elected, he's going to aim too high and it will change the goalpost so far to the left, which is what the right has been doing for the last 20 years.
Well, that's an interesting...
Every time we talk about... Every time we talk about an issue... Like
they frame the Overton window is what you're saying.
Yeah, no, yeah. The Affordable Care Act is a perfect example. This is Barack Obama's
signature
legislation. It's the greatest thing he's ever done. It's a Republican bill because they moved the goalposts so far to the right that in order to get someone from the left to get something done, we had to agree to something that they suggested 25 years ago, and now they yell about how it's the liberals destroying the fucking country.
Yes.
It was a Republican fucking suggestion 20 years ago.
Isn't that more to do with just better messaging?
Yes.
And the playing the political game that the Republicans are always...
No, here's the thing. So, in the checkers game of politics, Republicans fail. They suck at checkers. But they fucking nail it on chess.
Yeah.
Like, they are doing so well at playing, like, the 30-40-year game.
Well, now with Trump, they're playing Candyland.
But... Well, yeah.
I don't even know what we're going to shoot some ladders.
Shoot some ladders.
Like, just, like, go up a pole and down a hole, and here we are with Trump's phenomenon.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We'll get back to all the poles and holes that Rachel would like to talk about. And shoot some ladders. I apologize in advance for all my lovely sound effects in the background. Like I said, I'm battling the swine flu or something over here. So
I had the swine flu.
Hopefully not. That was awful. Zika
speaking virus. Of swine, speaking of swine, looks like Trump's about to talk. So
we'll keep you up to date on what he says.
We'll watch that and get back to him.
We'll be
About 3 seconds.
We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony here on a Republican Nevada caucus night. And again, I apologize in advance for my awful head cold sound effects that I'm bringing you throughout this whole deal. Since we have four people on and we're kind of sharing area mics, there's no way to avoid it. So I apologize in advance. I'm sure that's really professional. But and we got it's myself, Rachel and Dana Hutchison, and we have our good friend Molly with us, who's bringing some excellent insight into the caucus process and some other stuff. And when we broke, we were talking about... What were we talking about?
Well, that was a minute ago.
What
we are talking about now is that Trump is the projected winner in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
And that Jeb Bush has 9 votes.
Jeb Bush Gurley has 9
votes. It's a comeback, Jeb.
Jeb, come back to the
unsuspend
race,
your campaign. They're almost at double digits.
He's been here for years.
He has,
actually. And 7 of those people are Bush family members. But we
so, again, I have to give you the Bush primer. I actually went to kindergarten with Jeb's kid, George P. Bush, who is now... in Texas as the agriculture commissioner or something. I'm sure he's really qualified for.
I'm sure.
Nepotism
at all, of course.
No, and I did see a tweet the other day, and I grew up with him, and I know him fairly well, and I know Jeb sort of fairly well, too, down because we're all from Miami. Oh, it's fine. The cat can can chime in.
Blix has a lot to say on this.
He has a lot to say. But
he has a lot to say.
But I saw a tweet the other day. It's like, don't give up on the Bush name yet. George P. Bush is up and coming. I'm like, oh, yeah, because the Bush name has really got momentum right now.
Yes.
Oh, big time.
I mean, it's just a clearly upward trajectory from the end of W's reign to Jeb's run now. I mean, look out, baby.
Clearly, Trump didn't.
Clearly, America
that in the
wants
grave.
More Bush.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, they can't get enough, right?
Yes.
If you pay attention to Pornhub, America has been paying less and less attention to Bush.
Is that right?
I don't know about
See,
that.
I'm not on Pornhub that much, too. But I'll take your word for it.
But yeah,
I do very much like the Twitter Pornhub comments. Page.
Yes. Oh my god, that's so good.
That is a winner. But
that is way off track. But anyway,
not really.
No.
Bush
is still holding strong at 9 votes. I'm really hoping he gets a double digit.
See, that's what I was saying.
Well, the funny thing is, and this shows you how spread out and rural most of Nevada is out of those 9 votes, they're showing that he's got 4 delegates.
Correct.
Yeah.
So there's probably like 4 precincts out there where literally one person showed up.
And right. And it should be said that the same will be the same for Colorado because the minimum number of delegates per county is 4. Is that what said we've
got, that's correct.
We've got 60 precincts or 60 counties.
Well, we have 64 counties in the state of Colorado.
Yeah.
So we will have 64 counties with different delegate counts and based on population.
And the lowest number is 4.
The lowest number possible is 4. So apparently with his 9 votes, Jeb Bush has 4 delegates.
Yeah, so he must have won one, if it's the same as Colorado.
Oh, right, because they have 4 delegates in that one place.
He must have won one county, which is like
three distant Bush relatives on a ranch in Nevada. Right.
And so, how Colorado has said they're going to do it is in places that are super rural, that, you know, maybe one or two people might show up. They will satellite them together and group them.
Yes.
And
we're so much more organized and sensible here. Doesn't it seem that way?
Yes.
Yes.
For all the people that say we're all pothead hippies, like we got this under wraps. We know what we're doing.
Hey, yeah. Pothead hippies give a fuck about their politics.
They do.
Apparently.
Sometimes, yeah.
When
sometimes.
They can remember to show up.
I will say also that 270 women apparently have left the kitchen. To vote for
good for them.
Yeah,
they finished making dinner and they decided to go caucus.
They finished making cookies.
Is that why they did the Nevada caucuses so late in the evening?
Yeah.
So
they could finish making dinner.
The women had to finish making dinner and feeding their husbands and children, and then they could go caucus.
Let's talk about Kasich for a hot second.
I have a thing to say.
Okay.
So last podcast you asked me about how long Colorado had been a caucus state.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Oh.
So I said forever. That's not true. That is not true. We became a caucus state fairly recently, and it was for financial reasons.
Yeah.
If you know anything about Colorado politics, it's very much about taxes, and we have something called Tabor, which is the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights, which has pretty much destroyed the state.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah. What is his name? Bruce Randolph or something like that. Yeah, he's in jail. Anyway.
Yeah. So...
You know, the guy who came up with the idea
is in jail for tax fraud.
Should tell you something.
Right? Yep. So we are kind of a crazy state in terms of taxes. But the reason we changed to a caucus state was because of tax reasons. Because primaries are expensive. And caucuses are cheap.
Relatively.
Because you get an Alameda High School and you get a bunch of people to stand in a corner and you count them and you report it.
And you don't need voting machines, which are expensive.
Yeah.
All the software.
So I was wrong and I apologize for that. That's a correction. Colorado did turn into a caucus state. So
yeah, so anyway. So because we asked that question, like, why the hell are we still doing caucuses? That's why, money, and for that reason, and with state budgets strapped everywhere, expect to see probably more caucuses and not less.
Well, which begs the question of should this be funded a different way? Should this be run a different way? Should we be considering this more of a national interest than a strictly party interest?
Yeah, but
what's really interesting about that is that not necessarily that the federal government needs to step in, but that state governments need to be responsible for election politics rather than state parties.
That's the problem.
Currently in Colorado and in any caucus state, the party... Hi, Blixa. The party is responsible for how the primaries are run. Not the elections, but the primaries or caucuses. And so it's a really interesting question to ask, like, is that the right way for things to be done?
Yeah.
Right.
Should it be about the party deciding things, or should it be about... the greater interest, the greater public interest of democracy and elections.
Yep.
I mean, the reality of the situation is it'll never shift anywhere near anything other than party control. As long as we have a two-party system, it'll always be this way.
Well, issue of the state parties wanting to hold on to control.
That's absolutely true, but we get into things, you know, like, you know, why is the New Hampshire primary and the Iowa primary always held the way that they are? It's because there were laws pushing those states saying that they have to be held when
And then they hold the entire DNC hostage and say, we're not going to give you this or that if we
But the state party, you know, Iowa, New Hampshire state parties have pushed those to be state laws.
Yes.
And then they're in conflict then with the DNC itself.
Yep.
about whether or not that's actually good for the country. And, I don't see this changing outside of a two-party system, period.
And I don't know that we're ever not going to have a two-party system unless we have proportional representation.
Correct.
Right.
What would be, do we have another example in the world of a all-or-nothing, winner-take-all democracy?
No. Everywhere else.
Great Britain is close.
It's parliamentary, though.
Great Britain
and
has
coalition parties.
They do.
Proportional democracy.
Yeah,
but
it's the two main parties that are
But they also
Hold on. It's the two main parties because that's how the last election shook out.
Hang on.
But they have proportional representation in their different houses.
They have to have a coalition government in a way that we don't have.
No, we do not. And I don't know that any other model has ours.
No other model does. And when emerging democracies come forward, they often look to the U.S. and ask for help in developing their constitutions and their systems of electoral government. And often we don't point to our own system. We point to the parliamentary system because it makes the most sense from a democratic perspective. Mm-hmm. There's not two parties. There's, 5, 10, 15, 20 parties. And those parties agree on some things and disagree on others. And whoever gets the most votes isn't one party, but a number of parties, and they have to form a coalition, which immediately brings the kind of coalition building like we talk about in the U.S. together that we are struggling for, because we've had to have members of seven different parties come together and say, hey, we all agree on these X, Y, and Z things. Let's form a government and let's do those things.
Which removes the incentive for polarization.
Exactly.
Right.
And for partisanship, right? Mm-hmm. And so, we disagree with the other side that are a different government. But we agree as these seven parties that these five things need to get done. And the interesting thing about parliamentary politics is that if at any point in time that coalition or consensus of parties doesn't exist,
it dissolves
and they have another election. Yep. It's not based on this 4-year model or 6-year model or whatever. They just say,
that's why people
don't agree with it anymore. Yep. We're going to have a new election because we're done.
That's why people always get confused when it comes up. Like Israel may be forced to have another election. They're like, well, what are you talking about? They just had an election. It's like,
they don't agree anymore.
Yeah, but it didn't work.
There's no consensus now. So we have to have another election to see where the country is.
They do it completely differently.
It's much more democratic.
It's also potentially more dangerous.
It is.
Well, it's more unstable.
It's more unstable, and there are pros and cons to both. But I don't know that we could argue stability in the United States at this point.
I agree. Well, exactly right. Are we stable? I don't feel like we're stable.
We don't have a functional Supreme Court. We don't have a functional government at all.
We're very stable in not governing.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, we can all agree not to govern, apparently.
Well, we can all agree that just that's the better option. Yeah. Just don't do anything.
So I hate to turn this
idea
or conversation into a Bernie commercial. But one of the things that I think that has been important, at least in this election cycle, whether Bernie wins or not, is that he's gotten a lot of traction with the idea that it's maybe possible that other countries are better at things than we are, and maybe there are other models.
To
the point where what I'm excited about is I've never been a fan of, straight capitalism anyway. So
you're not a fan of any kind of capitalism,
I'm not. But to talk about the idea of a different economic model, the way that certain things are done in European countries.
Yes.
Whether or not I agree with what his particular model is, what I do think is really striking is that Bernie Sanders has gotten a lot of traction with a lot of people talking about the idea that American exceptionalism is not necessarily this amazing thing. And then you see Trump on the other side.
That's his whole message.
His entire thing is make America great again. He's saying American exceptionalism should be a thing, but we fucked it up. And so they're both saying America is not as exceptional as we've said it has been. Like, let's not live with the trope that America is the greatest country in the world. Trump is saying let's make America great again by making it what it used to be.
Yeah.
And Bernie Sanders saying, let's make it like just as good as the other stuff by doing some of the great things they've been doing. And
that's the pervasive myth that all these and they're not truly socialist countries. Like, we talk about places like Denmark and Sweden and Norway and
the Netherlands.
Belgium. What they've done is they've pulled out these things that should not be commodified yes. and made them public goods.
Yes, like healthcare and education.
Healthcare, right. education, prisons.
Yes.
There are things that should not be for profit. There are yes. things that are too important to the public good to be for profit.
But they're, yes. but they're not communist. It's not a centralized economy.
No, if you want to get shoes, you should be able to compete for shoes. Well, yes. and that's what shoes
but
are.
But you shouldn't have to compete for education. Absolutely or not. You shouldn't have to have a privatized prison system where someone's profiting on people being in prison.
Selling children to the prison system because you're making kickbacks from the privatized yes. prison system.
Yes, exactly. And that's something that capitalism does. I mean, there's a reason nobody's throwing around the word Marxism around, you know, Bernie Sanders, or even in this country, nobody calls each other Marxists.
Oh, yes, they do.
For whatever reason. Well,
they you know, we're going to the Breitbart's comment section?
Super Breitbart, right?
No, radio.
I'm pretty sure I'm a Marxist.
But I hear what you're saying.
I'm talking about rational people who know what the word means.
But, well, and look, on the other side, the vast majority of them think Obama is a Marxist.
Obviously not. Hilarious. I mean, but when we start talking about capitalism on the other side, we start talking about privatizing fucking Social Security and privatizing prisons and all the things that they want to privatize.
Oh, did Rubio slip?
Nobody on our side, yeah. I mean, is saying at any point in time, you know, here's what we'd like to publicize, or what would be the opposite of privatize? Not publicize, but
make public, yeah. centralize,
or federalize. You know, many of these different things. Like, that's something that is a certain...
Your average conservative doesn't know the difference, though. No, they just don't. Hear socialism, and they lump it all in with communism, and now Islam for some reason. But...
Because Islam is so fucking communist.
Well, and here's what, I mean...
Well, the Soviets actually thought so, and they were... Yep. They had a rude awakening in 79.
Well, yeah, there's an entire reason why Osama bin Laden existed, which is because those two ideas coexist.
It wasn't ideology. It was nationalism, and they were being invaded by a hegemon. They don't care if they wave the banner of communism or capitalism. It's a big imperialist force, and the enemy of our enemy was our friend, so we were very happy to arm the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets without the foresight that these are radical Islamists. And we might piss them off at some point. And now they're heavily armed with all the CIA knowledge of how to bomb the shit out of us.
I totally agree with everything you just said, but I do think it's slightly more nuanced in the reason that they had a disagreement in the first place.
Which is, really?
No. Because
it was death to Russia before it was death to America, just because we traded one invading army for another.
Right, so before it was invasion, it was an argument about ideas.
Arguments about ideas not as though, far are as the Muslim world in resources went. And land.
Right, and so
arguments about ideas are canards to fight to cover up the argument about resources and land.
Right, but the use of those resources and land were based on socialist ideals from Russia. Like, not necessarily about who owns what territory, who flies what flag. It's about what those would be used for, because they didn't give a fuck if somebody flew a Russian flag or whatever flag. It's about what those were going to be used for that they originally had the argument for, which is what spawned Russia's idea to just violently take it over, because as Russia is wont to do.
Look, I did a lot of Cold War and Middle East history studying, and the bottom line is ideology had very little to do with anything. It was who was treating that particular country better in terms of aid and supplies and arming them against their enemies.
Wasn't it all proxy?
And there was, yes. And there was a lot of...
Significantly, yes.
And there was a lot of tribalism. And then, of course, the Western powers went in and drew these asinine maps like the Iraq and Yugoslavia and you name it. And
colonialism once again.
Yes, exactly.
I will say that word on every podcast if I can.
No, and I mean, if we want to go even further back than that, the fact that the UK and the US went through and just made up a map based on whatever the fuck they wanted to.
Yes.
Started enough sectarian violence in the region.
Particularly, not necessarily in the Middle East, but particularly somewhere in the Middle East, but particularly in Africa
big time.
White people, man. We just can't stop fucking everything up. We just walk in and go, oh, this is a country, and this is a country, and this is owned by us now, and then, you know, people are like, well, that's actually splitting my tribe in half, and that these people I hate.
If we just let Donald Trump build casinos.
Walls. So here's the problem with the way casinos. That we drew all those maps was we didn't build any walls around the arbitrary lines that we drew. So, if we'd have put walls on all of those.
Rubio is in second place.
So let's go ahead and shift our attention back to the Nevada caucus real quick. It's going to be, well, let me talk about Kasich for a hot second. remember, the media was very fascinated with Kasich after he finished a little better than expected in New Hampshire.
Second place. Right?
Was it second or third? I think it was third. But anyway, he did a little
better. But it was a good third. It was a solid third.
He did. Yeah, third is the new first in the Republican side. But
what I was just going to ask, is Marco Rubio going to come out and give a victory speech for his third place?
Oh, he's going to declare himself king of the Alpha Quadrant in second. But look, the point is this. They were very excited about Kasich, especially the mainstream media, especially the liberal media, because they were thinking, oh, God, you know, if a Republican does win, at least this guy sounds sane. And yeah. Right. Chris Matthews was practically filleting him the other night on his show.
Yes,
and,
he was.
And, you know, it's like, first of all, the guy is not a moderate. He gets to pretend he's a moderate because
he just defunded Planned Parenthood in Ohio yesterday. When Planned Parenthood funds already don't go to
abortion services. So we're talking about HIV prevention and screening, cancer screening.
We're talking about Medicaid dollars. If you want to get really specific about how they're defunding this, it's Medicaid dollars.
Which, by the way, is also going to go to the court and get struck down eventually.
Well, it's 4-4 right now, but probably in the federal, you know, the
appeals court.
Because right now we don't have a Supreme Court. So, but I mean, when you're talking about defunding Planned Parenthood, what you're really talking about is Medicaid dollars, which punishes and is punitive against the most vulnerable and lowest income women in our country.
Correct.
It is an atrocity.
Yep. It is an atrocity, correct.
And the media won't talk about that because they just like to get excited about the pro anti-abortion.
Defunding Planned Parenthood means we can't have abortions, which is
It's awesome clickbait to air those
red herring
videos.
No, exactly. It's a story. It's a headline, but the actual minutia of what it actually means.
Well, defunding Planned Parenthood has nothing to do with abortion. It has to do with taking federal dollars away from an organization that does preventative screenings and birth control.
And let's get down to the bottom. I mean, the brass tacks on the individual level. What it's really doing is telling a woman who has Medicaid insurance that she can't go get preventative care.
Correct.
That's what it's really doing.
Correct.
I mean, if you're talking about how it affects the woman individually, it is telling her she can't go get preventative care, she can't go get birth control, and if she does want an abortion, it's probably going to be back alley and it's probably going to be dangerous because women still have abortions even when it's illegal.
That's exactly correct.
Well, that's right.
And from a real practical end, if you can't get your care, if you're on Medicaid and you can't get your care from a Planned Parenthood,
where the fuck are you going to get it?
You can get it from somewhere else that does accept Medicaid. It's going to be significantly more expensive to
and
the
less
federal government.
But it's
and
not available.
Depending on where you live, if you are in a place where there are
rural areas, it's not available.
No, I mean, we're talking about 80% of the country is not available. We're talking about suburban areas.
Right.
There are other places that you can take your Medicaid and they will accept it, but it's going to cost the federal government significantly more because of how it's charged.
All for politics.
So, and you will have to wait longer for your appointment.
Yes, exactly.
It will be less comprehensive for the woman who goes in. They're not going to say, hey, by the way, while you're here, would you like a screen for the following tests? What kind of birth control are you on? What works best for you? Here's some options. It's going to be less comprehensive.
I mean, it's bad.
You expect it to be personalized?
The women in Ohio are going to suffer for this.
Correct.
No, if we're talking about women in Cuyahoga, they're not going to be able to go to a Planned Parenthood now, and they're not going to be able to go anywhere other than somewhere like Canton.
Yeah.
And if they go to Canton, they're...
How are they going to get there?
Do you have a car? Do you need to take time off work?
Are you 16 years old and you don't want to tell your parents what's going on?
And that's just Cuyahoga. Imagine what they've done in Texas where you have huge
swaths
of land.
Exactly.
And
we're
the
talking
most
about
poor
a state
people
three,
out
four
in West
times
Texas,
as big. Yeah.
Where
I
used
can,
to live.
I think I can say unequivocally and without any hyperbole that women are dying in Texas because of the decision.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Correct.
And it won't be publicized because they don't have a large voice.
No, because they don't matter. Who cares about
that?
We
them?
Don't
They're
matter. Just women
no,
men.
So it has been reported that the number of women who have died, from
home abortions.
The actual
preventative cancer.
Right. Yep. No, I was talking specifically about at-home abortions.
It
has risen
done.
In 2 years.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
In the last 2 years, it was stepped up about 15% and another step up about 15%. So
it's a terrifying thought to be a woman and to think that have a daughter.
Yeah.
I have a daughter. And it's a terrifying thought to think that she would grow up in a world where back alley or these illegal, dangerous abortions would be a reality again. And it's, when I'm thinking about the caucus and I'm thinking about the election come November, I can't help but think,
I know,
like, it doesn't, honestly, I like both of our candidates, and it doesn't really matter because I'm not a total one-issue voter, but I am an issue voter when it comes to my kid, and that is...
And again, I'll harp on this. Yep. It drives me crazy to think of all the 18 to 30-year-old women that not that I'm a ladies' man necessarily, but all the 18 to 30-year-old women I've met over the past 5 to 10 years, tried to talk to them about this stuff. They shrug and say, I'm not into politics. I said, are you into having control over your own body?
But but women have grown up in an age where they don't even think this is a reality. This is a possibility.
Exactly. Yes.
They don't think that we are on the brink, and we truly are on the brink.
Past it in some parts of the country.
I would just like to say, to what Travis just said, though, like, I totally agree with you. Yes. And it's frustrating for me.
Yes.
What frustrates me more is rather than to have you try to bang into the heads of 18 to 30-year-old women about this,
you
like
to.
You to bang into the heads of 18 to 30-year-old men about
this. Oh, I do.
I'd like you to say to them, how many abortions do you think you've had? Not you personally, but how many, you know, how many have you had? How many babies do you not have right now because of Roe v. Wade, because of Planned Parenthood, because of IUDs, because of birth control, because women are more educated? How many of those? This is not a women's issue.
No.
This is a people that have sex that can be procreative issue. Well, it's also even people that can't have procreative sex. This is an STD issue. Yep. This is a HPV and cervical cancer and throat cancer. This isn't everyone issue.
Guess what? The HPV vaccine works great despite what Michelle Bachmann and those idiots tell
you.
Get your friggin' kids the HPV vaccine for Christ's sake.
It's reduced HPV in women between the ages of 15 and 30 by 30%.
And we won't
even see the results of that for 10 to 15 to 20 years because the cervical cancer rates are going to drop precipitously.
Yes.
This is amazing.
And the thing that
the boys can be vaccinated too, by the way.
You should vaccinate your boys too.
The thing I cannot emphasize enough is that this vaccine has been tested to high hell.
Yes.
Because of the fact that it has something to do with sex.
Yes.
And so everyone has said, like, you can't tell my daughter she can get fucked.
No. This
without consequence or without, like, the highest of consequence because of the moral crusaders and the people who have said that you cannot tell children that it's okay to have sex now, that the danger's been removed.
We need to change the messaging.
Because people were so outraged with the idea that we just took a giant chunk of danger out of sex. It was tested so much. The testing on Gardasil, particularly Gardasil 9, at this point, is so robust that there's literally zero argument against it, not just for women between the ages of 14 and 26, which is what it was originally allowed to be, but then it was extended. Because of the testing that they did just for political reasons, it was robust enough that the FDA allowed them to range it from 14 to 32 for women and include men. From 14 to 26.
Well, it came of age in a time when vaccines were being questioned anyway.
Right.
I think there's another.
Well, let me back up a second. Let me back up a second. Oh, Jeb's up to 11 votes now. So 9/11.
Oh, they counted mine.
McAfee. Anyway, listen. I heard a great doctor on NPR, and he brought up something to me I didn't even think of, which was a forehead slap. Working in public health, he's like. The anchor, whoever asked him, well, how do you get people to get rid of the ick factor because it has to do with sex and the parents feel weird that they're giving license to their 11-year-old kids and they're like, well, don't even make it about sex.
It's a cancer vaccine. Do you want your daughter to get cancer or not?
Go to parents and say, this is a vaccination that will prevent many, many types of cervical cancers.
Reproductive system cancers.
Well, and that's the way the manufacturer... I'm blanking on whether it was Merck or Pfizer right now. I think it was Merck, but...
I think it was too, but I don't know.
That's the way that they were marketing it from the get-go. I mean, that's... So
it was the media that got hold of it.
So it was the media that got hold of it.
Republican right.
So they're not allowed... Yes. By manufacturing and just FDA rules in general, you're only allowed to say things that are true. When it comes to a drug, when it comes to a food or a vitamin,
yeah, you can throw whatever
you
bullshit
can throw whatever you like. This vitamin's good for sleep or whatever. homeopathic medicines, all multivitamins is kind of
so
crap.
Many baldness cures that I'm
exactly. They're trying to crack down on people making claims But you can still put whatever ingredients you want in and say, like, it's good for this.
The milk thistle will cure your gayness or whatever.
But, like, okay, so there's a great one called Ollie that I've seen a bunch of commercials for lately. There's, like, it's good for sleep. And I was
meaning
like,
what?
I was actually looking at the FDA website to see if somebody had made any complaints about, like, what does good for sleep mean?
Okay, but get back
exactly.
to the point.
But when you start saying it reduces your cancer risk by 99.4%, like, that's the kind of shit that you can't say
unless it's true.
Backed the fuck up.
Here's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. Back when we lived in a sane age where results like this would become common knowledge.
When science was...
Every governor and state rep across the land, regardless of their party, would be jumping over each other to make sure every fucking kid under their leadership got this vaccine. But now we're in this hyper-crazy, polarized, anti-science Tea Party new reality where there's going to be resistance to this.
Yeah.
Even though the CDC and the FDA are saying this is a good thing, every kid should have it, it prevents effing cancer.
So, can I just say one thing? Hold on.
I'm going to jump in really quick. It's very quick. When the original Gardasil results first came out, there was a giant push in Colorado to have it be required for all college – or not college-age, school-age children. So
the requirement thing gets a little –
It would be you know, anywhere between the ages –
I don't
ages,
think so, too, but
– I believe it was between the ages of 8 and 10.
Yeah.
We were requiring that you have it, and a lot of people said, like, wait, we need more results to come in.
No, we don't.
Because we there's more results.
Yeah, there's virtually no side effects.
Because – well, there are – but I understand their requirement, or I understand their cancer hesitation to say, we don't know if 35 years down the line, if all of a sudden it turns out that this makes all these people have Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
you know?
But they might have cancer.
So, but
meanwhile, here's a bunch of psych meds, kids.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a big fight. There was a big fight in Colorado about whether or not kids should be required to have the vaccine or not.
Whether it should be part of the cycle.
Yes. And then. Yeah. What surprised me, because I understand that not requiring kids to have a vaccine when there's not long-term results available, because, you know, it was developed five or six years ago.
Well, sure.
But it was
it because it's probably good.
Yeah, but polio was killing kids left and right.
Yeah. I mean, you weren't going to live to 65 at the time with polio.
I agree. I'm just saying.
So this is cervical cancer, so you're not going to develop it until 50. Maybe we should wait and see till these people live till 50. So we want a 50-year study before we make it required. And I think there's maybe a scientific argument to be made there. Maybe. I disagree with it. But there's an argument to be made. But when they said, okay, well, let's not make it required, but let's make it available and optional.
Recommended.
Recommended and optional. A bunch of people in Colorado went up in arms and said, you're telling all of our fucking six-year-old girls it's time to go fuck now. And there was a giant movement against having it even be available, because as soon as you give the girl the sex shot, it means she can have sex now.
Yeah.
Which they're the ones thinking that way.
They made it up. We were saying it's an anti-cancer shot. They're saying it's okay to have sex shot.
Correct.
And we did a terrible fucking job fighting them on this.
Well, they're always beating us in messaging, right?
Yes. Because we're right, so we feel like...
Because we're coming from a place of science and logic and reason.
If we come from a place that's right, we feel like we don't have to fight them as hard because we are right and we have the facts behind us. What we're wrong about is that they beat us on messaging every time.
They know to tap into the primal...
They know how to tap into their Frank Luntz.
They make the very best acronyms of all
time. Get to come out and just tap into the worst fear centers of the American people's brains and say,
well, and
that this is why this is terrible. Because what if women had sex for fun? That would be the worst thing that could happen to this country. So we need to punish them, give
them
cancer.
Same thing that happened in 68.
Give them cancer. Give them babies.
Yes,
the same
exactly
argument we were
that
having with birth control.
Exactly
women
that
who have sex should have cancer and babies.
That's
period. That's it.
No
there's
orgasms.
Nothing,
cancer
no
and
orgasms.
Babies.
Cancer and babies.
Orgasms? What are you effing crazy, woman?
Women don't have orgasms.
They don't even
what
have
are you
them.
Talking about? That's
wasn't it only
lie.
Like 30 years ago when they finally admitted women actually have orgasms?
It's a liberal myth that women have orgasms. times the only reason women are to be fucked is for babies
and cancer.
And cancer.
Well, I can see why conservative men would think that because they. But anyway. But
well, who fucks?
Because most of them are gay.
Well, I don't know anyone who does. I don't know. So any I'll of let that. You know if I find out.
So, what was your pinky thought?
No, it's gone. Oh. This is why it's terrible.
Pinky thought was that someone might be sticking one up Ted's. Okay.
Okay, Jeff still has 11.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just thought that was a prudent point.
It was.
So, Cruz has a little weird guy standing behind him who's giving me the creeps.
Oh my god, he does!
Oh my god, it's Jeb Bush's, like, failed clone.
It's the Mr. Mephisto's sidekick.
Everybody were watching this.
Okay, who is that guy again?
There's the guy behind Ted Cruz right now.
Who is wearing...
Like,
okay, so ever
is that, is that Jeff talking. Sessions?
In the movie like, Spaceballs, wait, you know when they go into Ruticus space?
Yeah, okay.
You know in Spaceballs when they go into...
He's a creep.
He's ready for Christmas.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know in Spaceballs when they go into Ludicrous space?
Ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed, and they go, you know, from the passing stars into that plaid. Oh my god, they fucking plaid. He's wearing that.
But no, he's wearing Christmas plaid. He's ready for, like, the picture with his family.
That has got to be the ugliest damn sweater I've ever seen. It looks like really, a Scotch tape roll.
It's really an amazing
piece. Oh, my God, it's a Christmas Scotch tape roll.
Yeah.
It so is. It's
sorry that we're so distracted, but it is the ugliest goddamn garment I've ever seen in my fucking life.
I'm distracted by the evil Mephisto guy to the right there.
Yeah, no, the right
one. Look, I'm a short guy, too, but...
So, hold on, which one? The super short guy?
No, yeah, the one right here.
Oh, he's more than short. He's, like...
Is he standing on a lower step?
Yeah.
No, he must be. I think he's that short.
No, look at his suit jacket. He's clearly a pygmy.
No short shaming, guys.
No.
Me and Prince are going to be very upset. And Michael J. Fox and Tom Cruise and Danzig.
It's the eyes.
I was going to say, like...
And Lindsey Graham.
I think I've seen him at the Nordstrom boys department.
I shop at the boys department sometimes.
So has
he. So have I.
The only suits I can find that fit.
I wear boy suits. I wear chunky boy suits. They fit better than me.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently I have
Perils of having a short... Well, Dana's not even short, though.
He's a little shorter than... Yeah.
I'm short.
Skinny. Big boy suits are a better cut.
Skinny.
Okay,
oh, no,
the right.
Short guy's getting blocked by the signs.
The
people
guy on the right,
up.
Who does he look? He looks like a movie star that I'm trying to...
All right, we're getting way off track. This is terrible.
Yeah,
all right.
But he's really...
Anyway, you don't want to listen to us watch TV.
Anyway, Cruz is announcing his third place victory.
Woohoo! Is he third? I think he's second.
Here's the weird thing. I was going to bring this up. Right now, it seems as though... Yeah, Cruz
has
second. More... Well, no, hold on. Cruz is losing significantly in the popular vote right now, but he's got more delegates right now, which is interesting. Because of counties.
And that could very well happen here in Colorado.
Caucuses are bullshit.
Right. So
it has nothing to do with the popular vote. Nope. It has to do with how many people in a certain county
and
how many delegates they have.
Going back to our smallest counties, which I can tell you population-wise, our very smallest county has less than 300 residents. They still
get
four delegates.
And Denver gets... 500 or 600.
So Cruz is.
But I can guarantee you that Denver has more than 500 or 600.
So yeah, Marco Rubio has
2,353 in terms of the
votes. So he's got 24% of the vote, and Ted Cruz only has 20% of the vote with
2,049. So he's got 300 more votes at this time.
But depending on where those votes came from and the counties that they came from, that's how the delegates
are. So Cruz is probably picking up some of these little shit counties in the mountains.
Yeah,
that's exactly correct.
Where only four people showed up.
Yes.
So that's interesting. I don't know if it's going to hold because there's only like 15% of the vote being
counted. And that could very well be how. I mean, if Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton were to win Colorado, that could very well be how.
Exactly.
Is that because we are a proportional state, they could win, you know, Hillary
could
win.
And there are so many
counties
in Colorado that are rural.
Well, Bernie did better.
Hold on, that are farming and that are rural and that are ranching counties, that if they've got four and there's enough of them that go for one or another candidate, whether it's Bernie or Hillary, that shit adds up.
Now, the vast majority of those people vote Republican.
They
sure.
do. Yeah.
But it doesn't
ones
matter.
Doesn't
we
matter.
Still get
even
four,
if you have one person show up,
we
you
get
four delegates.
For every county.
Now,
even
it's
the
interesting
ones.
Because in Nevada, a lot of those rural mountain people went for Bernie.
Yep,
I don't know about
Colorado.
We do.
I'm going to
disagree on regional basis. Now, if you're talking about the Western Slope, the Northeastern. Okay, so remember. 4 years ago, the northeastern counties were threatening secession from the state of Colorado.
Yes.
Okay? So remember the
so
fact
ridiculous.
That they are an anti-establishment push. So it could very well be that they see something in Sanders.
Yeah.
That's anti-establishment.
But I'm saying, especially the Hispanic counties in the southeastern part of the state are going to go for Hillary.
I agree.
No question about that.
I agree.
And I do think that most of the western slope
you're
is probably
going to
be
Pueblo.
Pueblo will be all Hillary.
Grand Junction. dysfunction. Yep. Yep. These things all are going to be all
southeast,
about Hillary.
Those southeast counties. But like,
how about Colorado Springs Democrats?
Colorado,
how many of them are there? 12?
I mean, I
Colorado
think,
Springs is a fairly sizable Hispanic and African-American
they
population.
They do. I think that you're going to see, you may see a split between Denver and El Paso, which I do think bodes for the general. I yeah. do think you're going to see too. Some split. I mean, Colorado, as goes Colorado, so goes the nation in a yeah. lot of ways.
I
and
know.
I think we're going to be
such a purple
we're
state.
We're going to be a purple state yeah. this year, and I do... You know, when you talk about electability in the state of Colorado, I think it looks a lot different than it does everywhere else.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because they keep calling this a real swing state. The Republicans always talk like they're going to win Colorado easily. In 2008, Obama won by 9. In 2012, I think he won by 5 or 6
yep.
with a shitty turnout.
Yep.
So,
Trump will never win Colorado.
No.
I mean, I want to...
No.
This, Norval Cruz, this is completely just, you know, my personal experience, but... I don't walking around the state, and I'm a person who lives in Denver, works in Boulder, so I'm mostly
from
northern
Fort Collins.
Colorado, from Fort Collins,
yeah.
visit there frequently. I don't see any Trump supporters.
No.
Everywhere I go, I see Bernie signs, I see people freaking out about, like, whatever we do, don't.
I see some Trump signs in Aurora.
And I would definitely, qualify that to say that the Front Range is our metro range.
Right.
You know, so the Front Range, from Fort Collins all the way down to down to Colorado Springs, you're going to see something different than you see up in Summit County.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No, certainly.
Slope,
certainly. No,
like,
Gilpin County,
think,
Summit County.
Grand Junction
yeah.
is
Grand Junction,
a really
big
interesting
time.
Well, before,
place.
Before we get to the general, let's prognosticate just for fun about March 1st. I think Bernie's going to obviously clean up in Boulder and most of Denver proper yeah. and up to Fort Collins, certainly. But
I think Hillary's going to take Colorado.
I think it's going to be, if it is not close. Okay, so the poll that I saw showed Bernie ahead in Colorado. But again, it's very difficult to
use those
predict
polls.
Well, remember one thing again.
And it's caucus polling
a,
is ridiculous.
So,
a, this is a closed caucus.
Yes.
B, you have had to have been registered as of January.
January 4th.
Yep. So I think that those two structural
impediments
yep. might give Hillary the edge.
Yeah. I think
rural Colorado is going to come through for her.
I think rural Colorado, I think any of our more, any of our more areas where people of color live in the state, I don't really know. I mean, it's so, they're so anti-establishment that I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these rural areas surprisingly come through for Bernie.
And honestly, his economic message speaks to a lot of their actual concerns. I don't know if that message is getting to them is my problem. I don't know that they are hearing it and that they understand it. As a Hillary supporter, but I love Bernie too, so I don't really care. I hope that his message is getting to them so that they can make an informed vote. But I do think that because Colorado is sort of a sparse area in so many parts and then such a centralized urban area in just the centers, that it'll probably go Hillary. But I think it could be a close fight.
It's going to be close no matter what. I think you're going to see a close caucus here March 1st.
I think it'll be really close, but I guess I was making more remarks about the general election. I don't see Colorado being as purple as it's being discussed in the media.
Not with the current state of candidates,
I have seen zero Cruz supporters. I have openly talked about, Bernie in my workplace and have basically everyone, you know, do like a Black Panther
fist bump,
but like,
that's
fuck
still
yeah.
generally.
But we're still, talking metro. I mean,
I
travel.
But I'm talking about, like, I've got a Bernie bumper sticker on my car, and in Lafayette, I've had people be like, fucking yeah, Bernie Sanders.
But
like, when I pull over to, like, just to get gas or coffee.
Yeah, but if you drove through
front
Colorado
range,
Springs.
You're still in the front range. So
story.
I travel the whole state, and I travel, mostly I travel in the Northeast, but I travel the West. I travel down to the smallest counties in southeastern Colorado. I travel everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think the politics in Colorado are local, and I think what you see is a real rural-urban divide. And even when you're talking about the urban centers in Colorado, even the ones we consider rural, like Lafayette or Fort Collins, or, you know, even the places around El Paso.
Fort Collins rural at all.
No, but I mean, it's not, I mean, if you're from Denver, it's, you know, oh, Fort Collins is so far away. But when you get up into the really small mountain communities,
Yuma and the little,
Look at the issues affecting them. You look at the energy crisis. You look at, you know, Weld County's got a huge energy
fracking
crisis.
Like the people we're talking
to. Yeah, exactly.
Cattle ranching, you know, with the supporters of Bundy. I mean, yes. You've got those on the western slope.
So, big. You can throw this in there, but then you also have to deal with, like, Red Feather Lakes and Estes and, you know, start talking about Steamboat and Aspen. You know,
mountain communities are totally different.
All of them, yeah. But basically what we're saying is that Colorado is really diverse, which is why we're a purple state, which is why we're a swing state.
Which just makes us so interesting.
But it makes us interesting, but I also don't think that there's anything happening on the Republican side that is, I've seen, motivate anybody to their side. So what she's saying is that
you're not seeing the rest of the state that she's seeing. They are motivated to vote.
I agree. I'm not physically there, but I'm paying attention, and I'm saying that I think that it'll be an interesting primary caucus session.
I don't think we
I think that this is going to be, Colorado's going to be solidly blue.
I don't agree. I think that we really don't want to underestimate the disaffection out there and the suffering out there. And I think that, you know, if it's Trump, I don't have as much of a concern, but I think Cruz could make a plea. I think Rubio could make a plea.
Yeah.
I think there is, I do think there's voters out there who will vote Republican no matter what.
My parents have said, like, I don't care who it is on your side. And I will vote for the Republican, and you're going to vote for the Democrat no matter who it is. I'm going to get your mom to vote for Bernie.
You know, the other thing we have here is a strong conservative Latino community.
Yes.
That we don't necessarily see other places in the
well-off ones.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about the other states to say, but I do know we have a pretty strong conservative Latino community that could, you know, and I do think that's why Hillary's going to run stronger here.
I agree.
Because they would show up more for her.
I was going to say, like, but I don't think they're going to vote Republican, right?
No, I don't think they're going to caucus.
In terms of, like, but they're not going to vote Republican. So, no. In other election cycles, it's possible that the conservative Latino community could have voted Republican. But now, given the tenor of the Republican campaign and the way they talk about immigrants and the way they talk about Latino voters, there's no way. Like, back in 2004, 2008, there was a sense that, like, we could maybe capture some of the Latino vote if we become compassionate conservatives, right? And then they didn't do that. And now, looking at what Trump is saying and looking even at, like, Cruz and Rubio,
and he's dragging Cruz and Rubio to the right,
you know, Cuban or Latino people, and
with
even
Obama
they're
going to
sort of, like, crazy.
No, they're talking about rounding up and deporting 13 million people.
Exactly. That, like, there's no way that even conservative Latinos are going to vote Republican.
Well, look, if you're a conservative slope owner in Breckenridge, or you own a hotel or a restaurant, that's probably scaring the crap out of you too.
Yeah,
because there goes your cheap labor.
That's
exactly right.
Deporting all my workers and, like, 1/4 of the people that are my customers. Not only that, but you know, the 13 million number gets thrown around a lot because everyone's talking about Latino people. If we're talking about getting rid of all of the immigrants,
all undocumented people, people who overstayed their visas, etc.
The 13 million number comes just from Mexico.
Yeah,
we need to talk about Canadians, Italians, French people,
people who overstayed
anyone
visas.
Who overstayed their visa. And when we talk about that, the number fucking doubles.
But nobody's talking about the white people.
When the law goes into effect, nobody means it for the white people.
But
it's important because if we say, like, you know, you're German and you've overstayed your visa by 3 months, we need to deport you.
No.
They're not going to say,
I'm telling you,
he didn't mean you. The law's not going to be written that way.
Trump was on O'Reilly last night, and this is great. Trump was on O'Reilly, and O'Reilly said, let's say there's a guy, let's say his name is Tommy O'Malley. Well, no, it gets better. His name's Tommy O'Malley.
From his book?
And you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, my God.
And he overstays his visa.
Shit.
Would you kick him out? Was it Trump or Cruz? Oh, it was Cruz. And Cruz said, oh, yeah, absolutely.
He gets kicked out just like everybody else.
So that'll piss off the Irish,
maybe. Alter ego.
Now the funny thing is,
fiction book character get kicked out by that's the most meta thing.
thing I've ever heard in my goddamn life.
In the 90s, Bill O'Reilly wrote a fictional book called Those Who Trespass.
Is this a Loofah story? No. This is a
Bill O'Reilly,
novel.
Bill O'Reilly self-penned a Bill O'Reilly fan fiction book.
I'm not kidding.
Called
it's
Those
true.
Who Trespass, where alter egos of good Bill O'Reilly
and bad Bill O'Reilly are the main character and the villain.
Both have sex with lots of young ladies.
Yes.
They're all blonde.
And fight each other to the death.
It is
the most amazing piece of literature ever. And he invoked one of his characters, one of his fan fiction characters, Bill O'Reilly alter ego characters last night.
He did not do that.
I shared it with Jeb Lund.
Oh my God.
I also shared it with J.W. Friedman, who thought it was hysterical on Facebook.
There's a podcast called I Don't Even Own a TV.
Which you'd like. Yeah. Obviously.
And I think it's Jeb Lund.
Jeb Lund and J.W. Friedman talk about this book.
Review Bill O'Reilly's book.
Yeah. If you've got, it's about 45
the
minutes.
The greatest hour of podcasting that's ever existed.
Which is literally a self-penned Bill O'Reilly fan fiction book.
That's amazing.
But the podcast is one of the greatest hours
where all the characters are
in my life. And everyone out there should listen to it. It's fucking amazing. So it's I don't even own a television. And the episode is
Those Who Trespass. With Jeb Lund.
With Jeb Lund. And it is the greatest.
And last night he invoked one of the characters from it to ask Tim Cruise.
It's like Welcome to Night Vale, but real.
Oh my. I can't even.
It's like being John Malkovich, maybe?
Great reference.
Okay.
Anyway,
we've
run way over. Yeah, I just wanted to throw in that this is the end for Kasich Mania. It looks like he's going to finish about 4%, and he doesn't have traction anywhere else. So unfortunately, now
Soggy Cheeto's going
to
win.
Hopefully, he'll hold on till Ohio. But the latest poll even shows Kasich trailing Ohio to Trump. So this Trump train is just
not enough. Women are leaving their kitchens.
No,
that's right. They couldn't
at least not for Kasich. Maybe
Ben Carson's beating Kasich at this point.
Wow.
Ben Carson's beating Kasich.
By a couple of
human Xanax beat fucking Kasich.
Well, Trump is the runaway train. Rubio finished second, so Mark Halperin and John Heilman will have kittens. French kissing pictures of Rubio tomorrow.
Yes,
sweet.
Talking about how he's so dreamy and he's amazing.
To
and
that.
Yeah.
So there'll be that. But
before we sign off, do we want to do predictions about if anyone's going to drop out based on these last couple of days, or is everyone going to hang till next Super Tuesday?
I don't know. It makes sense
it's
to
a
say.
Week. Right? I mean,
it makes sense to
say
Carson will drop out, but why would
you?
No,
he just said
he took fourth. He's taking fourth.
This is the new beginning, he said.
Well, and Ben Carson's legitimately.
Well, he's not advertising.
Well, no, but he's legitimately crazy in that he has told everyone.
No, you could have stopped right after crazy.
No, but I mean, he's delusional in the fact that he's told the electorate, like, his statement has been. Wait until after Super Tuesday, then people will start paying attention to who I am and start voting for me in primaries.
You know, but
which is like the possibly most politically stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say.
Yes.
Like, people will start paying attention to me after I lose Super Tuesday.
Well,
then
not
pay
how
attention
politics
to me.
Work. Yeah, he's very misguided.
He's very misguided.
They don't say.
Oh.
Like Super Tuesday is too early, so let me lose all that. Then, if I just keep running, people will start talking about
me. Then they'll be like, this Trump guy is crazy after Super Tuesday. And you're like, no, dude, that's not how politics works.
Like whoever wins Super Tuesday.
Well, hold on a second. Even if you're not going to advertise and your campaign is just a glorified book tour, it still pays money. To go to these sites and campaign, and he's not raising any money, and I don't think he's selling that many books. So at a certain point, I think he's going to have to pull the plug.
This is all just a ruse for his next fan fiction book. We're going to be hearing
or
about
his
the
next
Ben Carson
Make America
fiction.
Great Again.
Oh my God!
How
I've got
black
a,
people aren't really discriminated
against.
I've got
against, a great idea.
Or
Bill O'Reilly's next book, Killing Carson.
Right.
All right. Let's leave it all there. Right.
So I don't think anybody's going to drop out. If anybody were to drop out, it would be Kasich. But I don't. I think he's raised enough to where he can hang on till at least see what happens at Super Tuesday and then drop out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Cruz and Rubio ain't going anywhere.
It's a week. Everyone will hang out.
Jeb has 12 votes.
Oh my God, 12 people
and four delegates
Jeb.
Out there.
No, does he have four? Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh man, so
they
he
counted
won
all
county.
Three of my votes for him.
Well, those are just county delegates. He's not going to have any state delegates.
So Jeb might be back. Exactly. Stay tuned.
No.
So, Jeb, 12 votes in Nevada. You're not even running. Is it time for a comeback?
It might be.
Now, we have to go down the list of all the crazy also-rans who, you know, like the crazy lawyers and the libertarians and, you know, IP Freely and D's Nuts and see if he got more votes than them in Nevada.
Oh, D's Nuts.
All right.
Oh, I miss D's Nuts. D's
Nuts.
I want to vote for D's Nuts.
I bet you do.
All right. We're going to go. It's been an hour and a half. We're getting ringy.
It's been a great episode. Again,
thank you, Molly.
Sorry for my mucus geyser. Thank you so much, Molly. Please come back and join us whenever you fancy.
Yes.
So, yeah, we are going to be back before Super Tuesday, but we're working on our live stream extravaganza with Pierre and Skyping in from the caucuses and all that. We're going to see what we can do. Molly, you're welcome to join in on that if you want. Okay.
We're going to be multi-site, so we'll see what we can piece together with our limited
and what we're allowed to do legally.
And what we're allowed to record on-site.
Right.
Yeah, all right. We'll let you know.
Okay, so this has been Irreverent Testimony, coverage of the Nevada GOP caucus. Trump wins. Looks like Rubio second, Cruz third, whatever, whatever. So they'll all declare themselves winner, and Trump is running away with this thing, ladies and gentlemen. So let's see what the next steps are, and if they actually start attacking Trump in earnest and not just taking little pot shots here and there. Let's see if they really take the big guns after him now, which it's now or never, guys.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
As usual, I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Rosalind McAfee, 2016.
And I'm Molly.
Okay. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. See you next time. Adios. Diagonal, three brothers going, come on. Doesn't that make it?